I'm back. Oh, yes. I left you with baby goats yelling in the background. They had heard my voice and walked all the way across the pasture and down through the goat gate from the barn to the house and climbed up the back step and across the landscape garden. Thank God they didn't eat any of it. They bounced up onto the walls and jumped onto the back patio where the barbecue is, and they were standing at the back door, looking in, saying, "Ma! Ma!" These are baby goats that I've had to bottle feed because their mothers weren't able to look after them. You see, at the farm, we take in animals that have sometimes physical problems, like for goats, states of disease where they can't walk, or for mother goats where they get mastitis and they can't nurse their babies. And one of the mother goats here, she came in with breast cancer, and we were able to dissolve the tumors just using some very neat stuff that balances the pH of the body system. But she wasn't able to look after her babies. I had a really interesting encounter the other day when I was trying to do some business over the phone. And in the background, I had the babies going, "Mom, Mom, Mom, Mom." It sounded just like a little child playing on the floor. And the lady on the other end of the phone, the operator said, "Is that your child? Do you need to go and look after your child?" And I said, "No, actually, those are baby goats, and they're outside trying to get my attention." Language. I don't speak goat, and they don't speak human. But somewhere in between us, we have the ability to share common knowledge, intent. And it's also really interesting that I don't have to say anything. When I work in silence, I find that the connection with animals is much clearer. It's not like talking, you and I are talking today, but it's more like a feeling of just knowing or instinctive direction. I don't know quite how to express it unless you, as a person, have had firsthand experience. Then you'll know what I'm saying. Maybe you've had it with people where you've been thinking the same thing, or maybe you were thinking about the person and they called. That's an expansion of intent. That's a universal form of connecting and touching and sharing and maybe becoming a whole, two living people, organisms, plant, animal, men, whoever we are. Maybe when we have those common moments of thought, that makes us closer to being united as one thing. The goats are very interesting to work with because they're very quiet. They don't say much. But they sure tell you a lot of things by the way they stand and they look at you. They have very deep, penetrating eyes, almost like a dinosaur. It's like they have the ability to look right through you. And goats aren't managed or trained or domesticated on the same level as a dog or a horse. And so their instincts, their expressions, I think are pretty pure, organic, natural in their way of being. And when you're afraid, when there's fear, and it's trying to anchor itself in your heart, animals can perform miracles. And they don't have to do it with their voices. One day last week, I was pretty upset with some stuff that was going on. I just find people doing things to other people just so unnecessary. I find decision-making, policy-making in government so frustrating because really, I find there's a huge separation that's going on between people and the things that are supposed to be working for people. And so here I am outside feeling somebody else's manipulating feeling of emotion. I sometimes think that they entrap your emotions and maybe steal them like a vampire sucking your blood. And so I stood outside. It was a quiet morning, and my herd of horses were nowhere to be found. And the sky was gray, and a wind blew up, kicked the dirt into the air, and thunder rolled across the hills and moved down, shook the earth, vibrating into my feet. And the sound waves rippled through the air and struck my body. Now, I try to stand in the morning and do a meditation. I try to stand by my pine tree and clear my thoughts. And as this rush of environmental information, energy, surged down the hill towards me, I could feel the tension, those little pockets of emotional distress, the fear that I'd taken on from listening to the TV. I could feel it go, get afraid, be emotionally afraid, tighten up, you don't know what's coming, you need to be worried, be afraid. And maybe it was because I was standing with the tree, and maybe it was because I had a grounding cord. Maybe it's because I chose to breathe. I physically stood still, and I let my heart say, there's nothing to be afraid of, just stand still. And across the brow of the hill, 10 horses charge like fury of water rushing through like a flood, surging down the mountain, carrying the dirt in the air as a rush, rushing down towards me. One person, 40 feet, charging, striking the ground. 10 horses running at 35 miles an hour, swirling energy, wind rushing up. And I stood still. And I let the little voices going, be afraid, run, move, run, run, run. I let them be. And as the sound of the shaking ground, the wind, and the visual presentation of a herd charging at me all merged into an emotional state, I felt the fear run away. And a stillness set in. And I took another deep breath. And I grounded deep. And I loved who I was. And once again, I felt whole. So, I'm going to take a break here. And I think we'll be back in a few minutes. Thundering hooves roll down the hill, and a flood of hair and feet, emotion. Whose emotion? My emotion? My emotion picked up and ran. It went, oh, this is too much energy coming down the hill at me. Fear fills me up. No, joy fills me up. It's like watching clowns play on a trampoline. Horses are amazing. They can run and jump, and it's like they twist their bodies in the air, like corkscrews or springs, springing. And when their feet land on the ground, they duck their heads down and roll their shoulders and take another stride and a bound up into the air. Sometimes it goes way up in the air, like 5 or 6 feet. No wonder somebody thought they could ride a horse and jump a fence. They mill around me. The surge of energy stops. The herd comes in. Not with a rush, but at a walk. Because you see, I have no emotional fear. If I had picked up and run, if I had moved, the odds are that that herd would have tried to catch up with me. Not because they wanted to hurt me, but because they wanted to play. You see, our fear, not of the animal, but the fear that's programmed inside of who we are because of the things that we've been exposed to as the human intellectual animal, I think actually interferes with our ability to understand how to live and interact with animals. There's pretty cool research out there that says that animals are actually more intelligent than what we have given them credit for. You see, a long time ago, religion, it didn't matter if it was Christianity or if it was paganism, if it was shamanic in nature, all our original forms of belief actually assigned a natural intelligence to animals. Without watching animals, man wouldn't know how to mimic nature. And without mimicking nature, we wouldn't survive. We wouldn't have the technology we have today. We wouldn't have the drugs we have today. Because you see, in our history, in our belief systems, we actually assigned a very important role, intelligence, natural intelligence. And then we had a separation. I think it was Descartes that said that basically we need empirical measurement. We need a science. We need to forget all this spirit and angels and animal communication and energy and ether. And it's put us in a trap. Because you see, now scientists are just starting to understand that animals are intelligent. And it totally amazes me that when you do research, that we have to assign the research, the study, to be based on the foundations of human intellect, human ways of being. And we expect the animals to demonstrate human level of intelligence. Research done with chimpanzees and their ability to recognize words and construct sentences was a really interesting thing to read about. I learned that the researchers wanted the animals to construct a human sentence. But instead, they found that the chimpanzee could pick up 3 words or 2 words, and they would use those words as accurately as they could to say, give me the banana, or give banana baby. So give the banana to my baby. Okay, that's how chimpanzees formed language. And, you know, it's easy to sit back and wonder why did they think that an animal would form a human syntax, a human skill of communication, when animals don't run on the same level of thinking as a human being. You see, animals think not so much in a straight line. They actually think in a spiral. Their world is a spiral. Everything around an animal is motion, energy, energy transfers, different frequencies of energy transfers and spirals. Their information system is based on horizontal spirals of environmental input. And the type of information that we get from a higher source runs across or down their back, through the middle parts of their bodies, through their chakra system. So the type of information and the type of physical ability to use language is very different. And so when an animal is thinking like a spring, he's taking in, oh, I would say at least 50% more information. And that's just a guesstimation. He's taking in 50% more information, but his information does not join like a straight line. It joins as a twist. People tend to think mostly from the left side of their brain. That's where we get all the analytical stuff from. And the left side of the brain tends to want us to think in a straight line. And then you run across a person like myself. I use mostly my right side of my brain. I'm more intuitive and instinctive. And so when I'm trying to describe how to write a book or how to accomplish a certain technique, the straight line thinker has a hard time because I don't communicate the same way. My method of communication and my method of interpreting, absorbing, and employing information is closer to that of the animal. It's a spiral. And some people say, oh, you have so much information in your head. How does it ever get in there and how do you ever get it out? And I say, well, I've just got a different line of thinking. It's a spiral. It's a spiral. Now, if you took your slinky, if you ever had a slinky when you're a kid, or, you know, just go and find a towel, twist it up, make it really, really tight. And when it's really tight, that would be like a spiral. And if you untwisted the towel, you would see it would get longer. In nature, in information and language and communication, when things are on a spiral, they hold a massive amount of information because a straight line thought can only see the thing that's in a straight line in front of it. It's a straight line progression of information. In the world of animals and energy, spiral information goes around like a coil. And we get all this peripheral information. And so we might only have to use two words to express the same idea as what a human would need 5 or 6 words, or maybe 10. So animal language would not demonstrate the idea of sentence structure like a human, because their minds are developed to interpret energy levels, information from the environment, not as a straight line thinker. It's a very interesting thing to consider, how animals process information. And I think if I ever had a research grant, I would love to change the foundation of how we look at animals and their behavior, and not try to get them to fit into the human structure, because they aren't human. Humans are very special. Chimpanzees are almost human in their idea of, I can stand up straight and walk. But if you watch a chimpanzee or a bonobo, they will walk on all fours. And their reflexes and their information base is derived from the same places as the horse and the dog and the cat. Interesting information is out there about how animals look at people. Language. All these things are missing from our day-to-day understanding of how to share space, how to make friends with animals. When a dog first walks up to a human being, do you know where he looks? He doesn't look at you straight in the eyes. No. The first place a dog will look on a human being is to the right side of his face. The right side of your face. Behind the right side of your face is housed the right side of your brain. The right side of your brain is responsible for intuitive responses, your artistic expression, the place where your emotion, your environment, it's all there on the right side of your brain. Think about it. I'm going to go and take a break and talk to you soon. Reach out and send an email to esologicradio@gmail.com, and I will be really happy to receive any information you wish to share. Right side of your brain. Did you know that more than one animal looks at the right side of your face? Did you know that a lot of people actually look first to the right side of the human face? So somewhere in there, our subconscious self, our spirit, our being, actually knows to make that emotional, that intuitive or energetic connection by looking to the right side of the face. Maybe it's the visual clue, the intent of reading your emotional state. Or maybe there's a vibration hidden in behind the expression of who you are. But it's only on human beings. If a dog meets a new dog, he doesn't look at the dog's right side of his face. He looks the other dog completely over. He doesn't have to look at the right side of his companion's face because they live and function in the same energy system. The same horizontal system of spiral expression of telepathic or intuitive or environmental shared consciousness. They're on the same wavelength. They have the common expression of language based on spiral connections of information. But they have to go and look at the right side of the human being's face to understand our thoughts and how we share and reach out. It's okay. All things are good. You just have to let it be. So, on the right side of the face is where your dog will look. So, next time you meet a dog, smile and sparkle in your eyes. Are you ready? Here's a question. Why, when we train dogs, do we have them walk on our left side? And yet, when you throw the frisbee to a dog that doesn't know to be on the left side, he'll come back and try to sit on your right side. Does he feel your energy? Does he feel safer on the right side? Because that's the side where your emotional self can be found. And when we work with horses, we lead them. And we work with them from the left side. So is that perhaps a subconscious effort on our behalf to say, here's the right side of who I am? Can you see me? Can you feel me? I want you to understand. I want you to logically process. Yes, I said the word logically. Yes, I want the horse to logically process that this is how I feel, and I have no fear, and this is what my intent is for the day. It's very interesting how animals fit into our energy field and how they use our energy field to create instinctive reactions in a person. Have you ever watched somebody who's never been around an animal and they go, oh, I'm not sure, I'm afraid. And they might step back and hold their breath. It makes their body tight. And when the body is tight, it sends out faster energy frequencies. It's like making a milkshake. The bubbles get smaller, but there's more of them, and they want to move around in the blender. Okay, well, when a human meets an animal and they're afraid, there's all these little bursts of energy that spill out of our field. And they go and they touch the spiraling system of the calm animal. And that disrupts the animal's system, his way of thinking. Because, you see, our energy system is vertical. And we express our emotions horizontally. And animals get their information horizontally, and they don't run the same direction. Our emotional states are kind of in opposition, the way we run emotional energy. And so when a person's afraid of an animal and we send out this fear signal, we tend to create chaos in the animal's own energy system. And if they're not used to who we are, they might get scared. And then we have transmitted fear without even having to say a word to the animal. So there's this unconscious or subconscious line of communication that's constantly going on between human beings and their environment. And yet, we aren't aware of it. A lot of people aren't using it. Have you ever stood in a crowd of people and watched how they share words, how they do the social graces, the nice things, how they have the artificial look on their face? And behind that face is this child inside going, hey, it's me. You know, we could just take and get rid of all this fancy stuff. And we could just go down outside and play and giggle and laugh instead of this artificial fear of exposing who we actually are. And that's the gift that animals give us. When we come home from work, we have all the fear of, oh my gosh, what did I just say to that person and how are they going to interpret it? When we're not sure how to fit in the natural world, you can sit down with your animal and understand that he is reading not your smart self, your intellectual human being. He's actually tapping in and trying to find out how you really feel. Where's your fear? And can he help you smooth it out, burst the bubbles, still the spirals, and let you process the information that's all around you, that's there to help you use your own emotion? Not the intellectual, oh, I can draw out a budget and I can make the social schedule and the plan. But the side of you that says, this is my heart's desire. And right now I have all these concerns and I really don't know what to do. And I'm so concerned that they make me shake inside. And at that point, just look at your animal. And maybe touch him, maybe cuddle and hug, maybe go out and throw the ball for a minute. But just let go of the shaking the tightness and the fear, the uncertainty, the thing that you can't control. Let it go. Take in the positive feeling, the emotion that the animal brings into your day. And honor yourself and be whole. And inside who you are, say, I really love myself and everything will be okay. Because you see, if I don't feed the fear, if I disengage from the manipulation of my emotions, things pull together and they solve their own problems. They become still. A pathway, a serendipitous moment may occur, but something will come into your space and help get rid of the problem. The trick is you have to ask for help. And if it's financial, you cannot ask for that money to come in as just money, but ask it to come towards you as a resource to help you to survive. Not, I need money to pay this bill. Please bring towards me the resources I need to survive another day, to be awake, to be full of energy, and with this energy to be able to expand the experience of this life. And when I expand this experience of life, maybe I am going to help. Maybe my role may not be as a healer. Maybe I do something else. But with using my talent, my gift, I will use these resources to make the world a better place. And then look down at your animal and smile and understand that that animal just heard every word that went through your mind. They're that aware. Okay, well, I think I'll take a break and you enjoy. I'll be back. Are you ready? Say, wow. Breathe in. Let go. The voices of all that we are, all that we want to be, echo between the big towers, the apartment buildings, the offices. That's vertical energy. It goes up like spirals, like radio antennas beaming information up into the sky, up into the Earth's atmosphere. And it forms energy that flows all the way out into outer space. Say, Take a breath. This is Isologic Radio and Patricia Cleveland, your host. And if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at isologicradio@gmail.com. Energy is all around us, and we just kind of walk through it. Kind of like fish walking through water. Don't even know what we're doing some days. We don't understand that our intent, our emotion, drives through waves of information, particles, and it has a direct effect on how we feel. And our environment, our environments can either be horizontal or vertical in their nature. Horizontal. Round, curved, spirals, circles, all these natural geometrical forms shape and transmit organic energy from the earth. It absorbs organic energy from the universe, from the sciences of the stars, from the center of the galaxy. There's this radiating, spiraling, woven, interactive exchange of energy, energy frequencies, and information. And it comes down and it hits our planet. And it's full of life. And sometimes it's invisible life. We don't have the eyes or the senses to perceive it. And then there's physical energy. That I don't quite understand. I don't know if we are created from a different living form, a different type of consciousness. I don't know. But human energy tends to be vertical. And I've spoken about this several times. Animals tend to be horizontal, and people are vertical. And when we go into cities and towns, we start to see the effects of vertical energy. And when we move out into the country or we go to the park, we feel a change inside. The emotional stress drops because we are in an organic world. When we're in the street, walking down between houses, or we're driving in our car and going through the business section of town, and there's these huge office buildings made out of steel girders that radiate energy. They vibrate all the time. They set off ions, positive and negative, and they send out frequencies of energy that broadcast in a silent form, the language of metal. And that metal traps all of the electromagnetic field that's generated from your computer at your desk. And it radiates all the joy and the laughter that you may have going on in the lunchroom. It is a transmitter of energy. But because of the shape of one building against another, the energy can't really flow out like the wind. It's channeled, it's tunneled, it's reshaped and reformed, and it moves out, but a different out. It may move out and bounce off the windows and the walls of the building beside it, or it may move out from the windows of the building you're in and be caught by the air, the wind that channels down the street. And that information may flood outwards and influence the houses in the suburb. Or the heat that radiates from the sun may lower down, radiating into and through the air that surrounds the office that you're in. And all the joy and all the stress, all the hubbub, all the fear, all of that can be then pushed back up into outer space. And it radiates. And it goes out like a cloud and mushrooms and envelops the field, the thoughts of the earth. Now, I work with animals, and I get to travel quite a bit. And in my journeys, I go into town, and I work with people who do animal rescue. Or I may go to a dog show and work with the people who are trying to do better at the way they present their pets. And all those animals have a different feeling about them than the dog that I'll meet that lives on the farm. There's a shaking inside. There's this uncertainty. A dog that lives in the town, a cat that slinks between one house and another, they hold a different quality in thought. And maybe it's because where they live interferes with the way they're able to gain their natural information. The power of their natural feedback loop between the earth and all the natural information that comes to them. The shape of the environment that your animal lives in does have a direct role on how he's able to interpret who he actually is. You see, I run into dogs who don't even know they're dogs. They think they're people. Because, you see, they live in a people space. They watch people do things. And they don't have a pack. They don't know how to be a dog. Because the only thing they know is people. And when they live with you, they hear your voice. And they want to talk. They want to have a conversation. And they'll sit there and they'll look at you. And they'll smile with their eyes, and they might pull their lips back a little bit. And the next thing you know, you go, oh, isn't he cute? He's trying to talk to me. And you'll talk to your dog, and he'll listen to you. And he'll hear your speech patterns. And then he'll go back and think about it. And one day, when you least expect it, he will do the most amazing thing. You may ask him, do you want a drink of water? Do you want to go outside for a walk? And all of a sudden, he may go to the door and sit down and look at you and go, woof, or walk. Animals have the ability to try and mimic human words. Animals try to communicate. And sometimes when an animal doesn't have another animal of his own species to talk to, he energetically thinks he's one of us. And so his only recourse is to try and be one of us. And that's where you see animals start to take on the personality and the people type activities that we share with them every day. So, this is Patricia Cleveland at Isologic Radio, and I'm just going to take a break. I'll be right back. Thought about talking to your dog and asking him if he could please talk back. Sometimes when we play with dogs, sometimes when we play with cats, they start saying things. They may start barking excitedly. Hey, hey, throw the ball, throw the ball. Or, hi, I'm down here. Meow, meow, I really would like it now. Can you please give me my dinner now? They use their voices to try and be human because they don't know how to be anything else. And in our privileged domain of being human, we aren't paying attention. And then sometimes when the animal goes to extraordinary lengths to say, hey, I'm trying to fit in, I'm trying to express my thoughts, using your words, using your sounds, you make me feel really stupid. And I don't think I really am stupid because I'm really trying to figure out how to speak human. You know, if you get a chance, go on to YouTube and, you know, have a good day surfing around. You can type in there, dogs speaking, dogs talking. And you go and watch And some people will encourage their dog. They say, "Oh, can you say I love you?" And the dog will go, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, boo." And the owner is very pleased. And then some people will go, "Hey, can you tell me you want up?" And the dog will be sitting on the floor and looking up, and he's like, "I want up. I want up." And the people with the video camera will start laughing at him. So if you run across a tape where people have encouraged the dog or the cat to make a sentence, and then they have laughed at the animal's effort, watch the expression on the animal's face. Now, I ran across one tape, and this little dog was asking to get up. The owner had asked him to please ask to come up, to sit on her lap. And he did. And he said it so clearly, it was, you couldn't miss it. And the next thing you know, she laughed at him. And like a little kid, he kind of lowered his head, and he took his big eyes that had been looking up at her, and he rolled them to the left, and he rolled them to the right, and then he looked down at the ground. And he took a breath, and he yawned. And he sat there for a minute, trying to figure out what just happened. He did what she wanted him to do. He asked to get up to sit on her lap. He made that extra effort to talk like a human being. And she laughed at him. And in his moment of contemplation, he yawns. And for me, when animals start to yawn, it's an expression of emotional pain. It's a release of something that was hurtful. It could be a thought, could be a past trauma, it could be the way we missed the chance to interact and share. So this little dog sitting up there thinking about what just happened, and the owner's going, "Yeah, say it again. Say you want up. Say you want up." And the little dog is not sure whether he should actually invest in this human activity. Because it's like he's doing what she asked him to do, and then he's emotionally being wounded because she thinks he's funny, because he's asking to get up. So if you do talk with your animals and they talk back, don't laugh at them, because it takes a massive amount of intellectual effort for an animal to mimic a person. Animals feel us. They sense us. They know what we think. And we seem to miss that quality. And sometimes we don't return that shared thought. When I'm working with animals, I try to stay really, really still. Actually, I almost work entirely in silence, because I find that in silence, I can actually use my intuitive self, my energy self, to feel or to be guided, to be directed as to where I need to look or where I need to place my hand. Sometimes I will stand in silence and mentally ask the animal to communicate, what is the problem? What's wrong? And there are times I get some pretty amazing conversations. The trick is I don't tell too many people what's going on, because I don't want to be like that little dog and say, "Hey, I want to tell you this," and then get laughed at. Because then I get wounded just like the dog. And it shares the pain of not being accepted, I guess. I don't know. There was an actor who just passed away, Larry Hagman. A lot of you will know him from the hit series Dallas or I Dream of Jeannie. And I remember reading about Larry's way he kept his character fresh when he was working on the set of Dallas. And he said that every Saturday, he took that whole day and he lived in silence. Now, he participated with his wife and his children and all his friends, but he never spoke a word. He learned the ability to use his emotion, his energy side of his body, to make sure that when he was acting out his role, that he could understand how to project the silence of his language. I think maybe when people are actors, they do come from that emotional place, that right side of the brain, and they use that energy to imprint an emotional transmission to the viewer. Silence. Silence is golden. Silence is a gift. Silence prepares you for the next moment in life. And a lot of people are afraid of silence. In psychology, they'll make and ask a question, and then you answer it, and then there's silence. I'm going to create silence right now. Going for a break. CISA Logic Radio and Patricia Cleveland. I'll be back in a minute. Silence and intuition and mimicking each other's language. There are people out there that work with natural forms of training animals. And I think they're doing a really wonderful thing because you'll hear them talk about letting the animal soak it in. Let the animal process what you just did. Use your energy. Be big and strong and powerful. Use your energy to be soft, to be welcoming, to nurture. That's a form of language. And that's horizontal language. It's gentle. It's understood universally. Unless you're a computer or a car. Those things don't understand horizontal language. Because they're based on an artificial form of transmitting information. That's mechanical language, artificial transmission, development, and expression. And a lot of that language tends to emit hard, jagged, chaotic, disruptive waves of energy. And a lot of that energy moves vertically, just like the man-made thought of from heaven to earth. Okay? That is a form of energy that animals really can't function in. It's kind of like being blind. They don't understand. And so when you're a straight-line thinker and you come into the barn and you have this training program or you take your animal to the vet, and the vet is in a rush. And he says, I've got to go from point A to point B, and I have to find out what's wrong with this animal. When they don't take the time to stop, take a breath, and slow down that straight line process, that scientific thought, the analytical thought, when they don't take the moment just to introduce themselves to the animal and to connect, to feel. They're missing stuff. They miss information. When you're a trainer and you go out and you say, I have to go out, this is step number 36 in the training manual, and you go out there and you're going to perform that, And yet the animal goes, well, wait a minute. You know, I'm not quite ready to do this. Or, hey, you know, I laid down on a rock when I rolled on the ground and kind of twisted my shoulder a bit. Or a dog goes, hey, I ran across the field and I caught the ball 27 times yesterday and my muscles are kind of stiff and sore. Can we skip this? Well, the trainer doesn't listen. The trainer is the dictator in a lot of situations. We have a program and we have to follow that program because that's human linear thought. We lack the ability to be flexible and to learn to listen to our animals and some of the ideas that they may present. And instead of going in and saying, oh, I'm going to train this animal to do this and we're going to do this pattern 25 times till he mimics it, until he understands a pattern. If we went in with the idea of like, okay, well, I do have this thing I'd like to accomplish, but it doesn't all have to happen today. And if we happen to share a moment of play and laughter and joy, not on my level, but on your level, if I actually get down on the ground and let you jump on me and lick my face, and we tumble and roll, maybe you will teach me something today. And when you teach me something today, maybe that will make me a better person. Maybe that will help me understand how to interact with other people and make a change in how the day goes. Yep, animals have a language. And they look at us as if we are the alien force on the planet. That vertical world of living in square boxes, taking your dog or your cat outside for a walk, taking them back in, putting them back in the box, and ignoring them, letting them play with the toy, or maybe have them sit on the couch and watch TV. Well, it's kind of like trying to make an animal into a human being, and we might not actually mean to do it. But that's what goes on in the city. And then we start to look at the animal as if, he is a human being. And he has exactly the same emotions. And he processes love the same way I do. And that's where we start to fool ourselves. Because animals have a different type of love. They have a different sense of love. And humans, we have a type of love that needs to be reflected, needs to be seen, because somehow our love doesn't want to stay anchored in who we are. It either goes up, or it goes down, or it goes out. But how does it stay connected? How does it stay anchored in who we are? Our language is based on control. Not love. In animals, we marvel at their ability to just love us. Just love us. Unconditional love. I'll tell you a quick story about a horse that came to my barn. Had an owner that was corded or connected very deeply into the heart of this horse. And he was never comfortable. He was so uncomfortable that he actually hollowed his back. And you could ride him, but, you know, he just wasn't able to do his job quite as well as he should have. And one day, the owner went away and left me with this horse to fix. I'm standing in the barn and in silence, and from my heart, I'm asking this horse to tell me how I can help. And I kid you not, before my very eyes, sitting on the horse's back, where the saddle would be, where the rider would sit, is this form, entity, shining, sparkling, bright, orange, red, sparkling, powerful, powerful rage. And the horse said, this lady's anger, I take on her anger, but my body is now so twisted that I can't transmit this anger, this emotion, out of my system. And now I hold this energy being that's becoming a whole entity on my back. I need help. It hurts me. I don't know how to get this human emotion to move away. And I looked at this entity sitting on the horse's back, and I asked it what it wanted to do. And it said, I want to be powerful. I want to be seen. I need to control. I am anger. I am the anger from the workplace. I am the inability for the owner to control her own environment, her own expression, her own language. And so I am her. And for every insult that she has going on at work, every stressful moment of her day, it's funneled to me. And now I control the well-being of this horse. And you are a mere human, and you may see me. But there's nothing that you can do. And so I stepped out of the animal's fear. I stepped out of the anger field. And I stood and I thought a minute. And I thought, that's wrong. There is a lot I can do. So I called a friend. And she, in her skill set, does Reiki. And in my skill set, I use a system called universal healing. And so I allowed the Reiki master to stand at the horse's head. And I stepped into the field of anger. And we both created a pond, a pool, a saltwater lake. And it may have been dark and black, but it seemed to be the place that this anger wanted to go. And in that moment, take a breath, sink inside myself, and say, I've got to go and take a break. I'll be back in a few minutes. I just stood still in front of this big, angry mass of energy. And the next thing you know, I opened up my heart and I focused inward on loving myself. And the big, red, angry thing on the horse looked at me. Said, I'm not afraid of you, and you're not moving me off this horse. And it pushed me. It physically sent a wave of emotion and pushed me. And I backed away because, man, it was pretty strong. So I grounded myself deeper, and I called in all the parts of me, all the information, all the love, all the joy that I am, and I called it from all over the universe, from every plane of existence, from every place in time, from every cell and everything that is that knows who I am. And I pulled this cloud, this angelic force, this mist to fill in the spaces where I may have wounds. And in that moment, I stepped back into the field of anger. And I asked it to please understand it has a right to exist. And that my role is not to destroy it. But my role is to say, this horse has a right to understand love. And this human has the right to understand love. And the owner has the right to understand love. And unfortunately, love and anger need a separate space. And as I said this, the Reiki master moved into violet light and pulled in her guides and spirits. And they merged. And in this one moment, anger reached out to strike at me again. And as he did, this mass of mist rolled down over top and pushed him into our imaginary pool of black salt water. And once his energy field merged with the salt water, it was like watching him be sucked through a straw. He was gone. He was merged into a place where he fit more comfortably. There was no residue. There was no shadow left. The horse took a deep sigh. And in that moment, we respected his language, his intelligence, his telepathic power. He took and stretched his body and shook like a dog, like shaking off water, clearing the debris out of his field. And the Reiki master stood back out of his space, and I stood back. And we looked each other in the eye. Two humans and a horse shared a look, a glance. And as if in unison, in that moment, we all took a breath and started to yawn. Now, I think I yawned about four times. I know the horse, in a period of about 5 minutes, yawned 27 times. And for every yawn he took, his body filled up in the space where that anger used to ride, started to lift. His back, that was hollow and swayed, started to undulate, to spring, to move, with a flow of life that could never go there before, because his life was being sucked out of him, because he was so twisted in his body that his energy fields could not displace the feeling of a wounded human. Yes, we're pretty powerful things. And we don't understand how our vertical energy interferes with a natural process of communication, the natural process of living. Animals, they jump and they play. They can be out in a field. I watch horses play all the time. They play games. Hey, can I eat your grain? Can I eat with you? Can I share a meal? And one will say yes. And the other one may. Another friend will say no. And so there's this constant moving like musical chairs. I think that I'm going to go over to this pile and eat that horse's feed. And they keep ricocheting like musical chairs, round and round and round they go. And then one horse will walk up to the other and say, hey, I want to eat out of your grain dish. Do you want to move? And that horse will say, hey, I've had enough of the game. I really don't want to give up what I'm eating right now. So you need to go away. And so the ears will flatten. The head may lift up maybe an inch or two off the ground where the animal's eating. And that horse will look at its friend and say, basically, buzz off. So they have a way of playing, but they also know when the game is no longer fun. And they don't really laugh at each other. They support each other. Somebody may fall down when they're running across the field. And trust me, that does hurt. Just because animals are big and they fall and they misstep doesn't mean to say they just get up and there's no pain. Yeah, there's discomfort, and it may not happen right at that moment. It may take a few minutes as the shock waves of cellular disruption hits into the brain. The adrenaline, the natural ability of running from their pain, sometimes blocks a dog or a cat or a horse or any other animal from acknowledging their physical discomfort. But when they do, it's usually the next day or when they've stopped running for maybe an hour or two. And then they know they're in pain. But as a whole, when somebody falls when they're running across the field, they pull themselves together and they stand there for a moment and they wheel and run away. They wheel and run to play with their friends. Just like you, if you were playing on a soccer field and you tripped and fell, you'd get up and keep running. But then when they stop running and the animal goes, I think I twisted my shoulder or my back doesn't feel so good. Then the group comes around and starts to inspect their friend, try to figure out how they can help. You see, horses really can't physically mend each other. Dogs physically, well, I guess dogs do help each other. They will lick and clean and groom. They'll clean each other's wounds. But horses really don't seem to do that. The amazing thing about horses is their energy. And they use their energy. They will rest their chin on the back of their friend and close their eyes and step back and stretch their necks out. It's kind of like they're aiming their heart energy, their heart chakra, at the area of their friend that's been wounded or sore. And in that moment of touch, that energy from one horse to another is transferred. Now, I could be making this up, but I've seen it happen far too many times. You will see it with a mother, a mare and a foal, maybe a mother dog and her pups. You will see it with a mother cat and her kittens. There's a way that they use their head to caress or cuddle or hold their offspring. It's how they acknowledge love. And in the world of animals, love is one of the best healing agents they have. It's the universal power. It's the key to unlocking the wound. Now, the horse may stay twisted in his body, but that pain, when it's healed by another animal in his herd, is drastically minimized. It reduces. It helps his energy field knit and come back together. Now, yeah, there'll be physical discomfort in his body, but energetically, he will be able to continue on with his day. And maybe in a couple of days, that energy bandage from his friend will help to heal or to cause his body to adapt, the physical body to adapt, so that he can go on and run and play again. And this is why when we work with animals, we don't understand how they can go on and on and on. So be brave. Take a moment. Thank yourself. Fill yourself up with love. Heal. And come back and visit me at Isologic Radio. It's Patricia Cleveland at isologicradio.com. And this is me saying bye for now.